stress, being undervalued, these are some of the 21st century challenges that people can be faced with. But indeed, it would seem that modern fathers also have felt stressed and undervalued as well. However, despite feeling stressed, 9 out of 10 dads are happy with family life. Now, Father's Day would not be Father's Day without welcoming back ace broadcaster, author and father extraordinaire. Yes, it's the delightful Jeff Brazier. Good morning, Jeff. How are you?
Good morning. I'm really good. Yourself?
Always delighted to speak to you, good self, Jeff. I feel as though the energy just keeps going through the roof in any sense of the word. So it's good stuff
that.
There.
Love that.
Now, this recent research that was commissioned by Nationwide, of course, shows that over half of dads today would class themselves as modern dads who take on more responsibility than their own traditional fathers when it comes to doing chores, etc. But nevertheless, being the main brain breadwinner, there's still an awful lot of stress around. And Jeff, in your own particular case, again, you, I mean, in many ways, you are the archetypal gentleman who, faced with the sort of challenges you've been having in life, etc., you know, if it's going to be stressful, Dad, you will win that prize year in, year out.
Yeah, I've had no choice but to be a very modern dad, but I do have a choice in, as to whether I'm a stressed dad or not. Mm. And I thank the life coaching really for ultimately giving me some really good tools to help keep the stress low. And I think where we go wrong typically is we load ourselves up with too much, whether it's responsibility or too many things that we try and fit into our day. And ultimately it produces stress because we realize that we're failing, we're coming up short. So the answer to that, I find for me personally, is always to be realistic about what I expect from the day ahead and to get a plan in place. And that always helps things go a lot smoother, I find.
In terms of role models, probably people not to look to are Peter from Family Guy or indeed Homer from The Simpsons. But from your own perspective, what are the biggest pressures that dads are faced with these days? Because, you know, there's always that notion that you think, what have we done now?
I always think social media can be held accountable for a lot because you've got you've got the pictures and the messages kind of suggesting what we should be doing and what we should be achieving as parents. And obviously, you know, some dads are out sort of working, and whereas traditionally that used to be all they did, they now are coming home and they're getting involved in the housework and just being more of a team, more of a family unit, which I think is absolutely, you know, better for everybody, that everything is shared and everything is equal. But you know, sometimes I think dads come up short in terms of whether they're feeling valued, and it's not to patronise, because obviously, you know, some dads you can't say, oh brilliant, you've done the washing up, that makes you a modern dad, you're fantastic. But there's so much more equality in the house, and there's also such a I think a drive and a passion for actually doing things with our kids, and not being content with coming home just as your kids are going to sleep, so you barely get to even have a conversation with them.
It's that classic work-life balance that is almost the holy grail. Now, allowing for the fact that back in the 20th century, washing up would be done probably once a year, and then there'd be the ubiquitous barbecue once a year as well, from that point of view. It would seem that 21st century fathers, in most cases, have improved substantially on their forebears. Would you say that's appropriate? I mean, do you think we're actually doing better than maybe our early ancestors used to do?
Well, it's just that society's changed, and obviously what was okay and acceptable for many decades has changed considerably. And I'd say that's absolutely been great for dads, because all of a sudden we get such a closer bond with our children. I mean, that can be an arguable point. But in terms of myself, again, I don't feel like I could be much closer to my kids. I sometimes, you know, I have to be good cop, bad cop, which is difficult, because I think dads in the past have enjoyed coming in and because you wasn't the one that's just moaned at them to eat their dinner, have a bath, clean their teeth, do their homework and everything else that comes into it, you're the one that I guess gets the huge sort of smile and cuddle. So it was often considered the glory role, whereas now we're rolling our sleeves up, we're getting involved, but as a result I think we're enjoying stronger relationships with our partners and we're enjoying much closer relationship with our kids, and that's why the research that's been commissioned by Nationwide has shown that, you know, dads in the press sometimes cop a bit of a bum deal, really, and they deserve to be, as anyone does, valued and appreciated for the effort that they put in.
I was pleased to see that there was no mention of dad dancing in the survey, because that could be very embarrassing and we best not go there at all, really. But it does seem as though the key theme would be make time to spend with your children. I mean, 44% of dads had admitted that their biggest regret is not spending enough time with their children. Is that really something which, you know, maybe we need to look at employers as well to ensure that that there is adequate time allowed for fathers to spend with their children?
It's interesting, because I think if a mother goes to her employer and says, I need more time at home, I think it's far more accepted than it might be if a father goes up to his employer and says, I'm not at home enough for my kids. I mean, it's far more flexible than was, and our time in the workplace, I think, has changed a considerable amount. And you know, a lot of us can work remotely if we have a certain job and role that permits. But I always think that, you know, I'd always suggest to anybody that everything is up for discussion, and if it's good for the employee, then it ultimately it's good for the employer in many respects, as long as obviously you're not crossing any sort of any lines too much. But you know, have a conversation. If they're a parent themselves, then they will understand that you'll be far happier and far more productive in your role if you are able to go home and spend more time with your children. You know, you can work earlier. Maybe sometimes it's about working later so you can drop to school in the morning. But if we just assume that our employer will never ever allow it, then I guess we're never going to have that conversation. So we should push ourselves to see what is possible.
Nationwide.co.uk is clearly one website you can actually go to find out more details about the actual survey. Anywhere else, Jeff, that you recommend that people could check out online to find out advice in terms of how to sort that balance of work and family life out?
I think mainly, I mean, as you've said, nationwide.co.uk, but also to have those conversations with the all-important people in your life, such as your partner, such as your employers, to just really see how flexible your work-life balance can be. All the answers are there. There is always improvements to be made if you dare to make them and ask for them, ultimately.
And we hadn't realised before we actually did the pre-chat before this actual piece that there's a connection between yourself, of course, and the Cowley brothers, who, of course, are the messiahs of Lincoln City.
Are they really loved in Lincoln? I can imagine they are.
I think it's a case of Graham Taylor has moved on and back in those days, and here we have a side that actually sort of got to the sixth round of the FA Cup before they lost to Arsene Wenger's team. Yes, there we are.
What an incredible management team.
But apparently they got it all from you, Jeff. What's the connection?
I shall never claim that.
It's all right, we'll do it on your behalf. We're doing it now.
Thank you. But yes, Danny and I played for Gideon Park Rangers for many years as kids. Danny was captain. He was the son of a wonderful coach, his father, Steve Cowley. And he was always the loudest. He was always the most passionate. He had so much heart. He was the one kicking off the songs before and after the games. But he always had a lot of class about him, in terms of he'd always make sure he shook every single one of the opposition players' hands and urged us as well, whether it was a win, loss or draw. We had such a great team. And again, I'm so grateful for his father, really, for being such an incredible coach. And I can see exactly where Danny's not just got it from, but also developed sort of beyond that. With his brother to make an incredible team. I'm so proud of them, so proud.
And it keeps the father's theme going, which is fantastic. Jeff Brazier, it's been fantastic touching base with your good self today. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us, Jeff? Has it been okay for you?
It's been incredible. I've really enjoyed the chat. Thank you very much.
Well, then hopefully we can look forward to featuring you again in the not-too-distant future. Jeff Brazier, will you be kind enough to return sometime?
Of course. I'll speak to you soon.
Excellent. There we are, Jeff Brazier, football expert, almost taking over from your good self here, Lennox. How are you, sir?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Very good indeed. He had known about the party for a week. Pinky had told him and given him her address. Just a few short words from the opening chapter, which indeed Professor Fiona Moore has been perusing this very morning, actually, on the programme. Fiona, what are your thoughts for Ian about his latest offering into the wonderful world of literature?
Well, it's got me intrigued and wanting to know more. It's reminding me a bit of Saturday night and Sunday morning.
Bit rough.
Yeah, but you know, those other sort of coming of age stories, you know.
Yes, it is. It's basically about a man who has some very very great qualities and some very great deficiencies. And as far as dealing with life is concerned, he can't pass exams. He's not that he's silly or stupid or anything. It's just that. He just has the interest in it at the moment in his life. And it's sort of conflicts with his girlfriend and this sort of thing.
She hadn't meant to humiliate him, but she did need to be free of him, and that took precedence over everything else. That's a wonderful opening line there. Was that the part that your cat helped to write? Because, I mean, this is one of the things we have with Fiona having Aisha and Zhukov. Ian has two wonderful cats, whose names, once again, are Ollie and Obo.
Oh, those are lovely names.
Yep. So would you be dedicating the book to Ollie and Obo, Ian, or is that just a random...
I don't think really appreciate it. They're not going to buy a book, so why should I?
Harsh.
No.
It will happen. Anyway, time is tight. Ben, would you like to share any thoughts with Ian about how he thinks Newcastle will cope in the...
Well, yeah, but following the new fixture releases...
Oh, I didn't notice who you're going to play, Ben, your first game.
A very mighty side is all I will say.
Well, you mean who are going to win in the
first game? Man City, is it?
Yeah,
oh, right.
It's Man City. Oh, Man City away.
Really need a friction in the studio.
Oh, no. Well, no, there shouldn't be. Shouldn't be any problems. So, have you seen the new fixture list for the Newcastle tours there?
Yes, I know it's them. Yes, there's three. It's a tough one to start with. Home to Tottenham. Ironically, our last game in the Premier League was against Tottenham. We won 5-1.
Oh, right.
But unfortunately, a lot of the Tottenham players are out, thirsting for revenge, apparently.
Mm. Well, anyway. We've got Man United and Liverpool in the last two games of the season, so I think you're all right.
But, wow.
Yeah, I know, but 23rd of September is the date to have in your diary, Ian, as so is the 30th of December.
Oh, right, are we playing Brighton then?
Indeed, yes.
Oh, right.
So it'll be Brighton versus Newcastle at Brighton on the 23rd of September, and then away to Newcastle. It's at James's Park. It will be the 30th of December, so just before New Year's.
Wow.
Yes. What's your thoughts on some of the recent signings, rather, in not just the Premier League, but globally? Have anything attract your attention?
I've only been interested, really, in Newcastle's because they obviously still need to invest in players. They haven't got anybody new in yet.
Mm.
It's really until you know what the lineup is going to be. It's impossible to sort of...
And Ian, there's so much tight material that we need to sort of fit into the programme, including the Car of the Year, that I can only point Fiona to Ollie and Obo. There we are. Ian's cats relaxing after a hard day's eating and sleeping.
Yeah, that's absolutely it. Cats have to take lots of naps all day so they're well rested and prepared for their big snooze.
Well, they have their own designated stools. I think that's that's something to say.
I love the way they've both got their own space, you know.
It's all part of that whole rich tapestry that we've come to appreciate over the years, really. In fact, I'm sure we can see some connections between the Fiona Moore, Alan Stevens, Aisha and Zhukov camp, and the Ian Lennox and Ollie and Obo scenario.
They've got their own spaces too, and it's fun watching them negotiate.
Yeah, they need it, don't they?
Yeah.
It's part of life. Ian, have you had a reasonably interesting telephone link with us on the programme today?
Short but sweet, yes.
Good. That's what we like to hear. And will you be returning to us probably in a fortnight's time, actually, because next week it's a Lincolnshire Show special. So we'll once again. And unless you fancy taking up that offer of actually coming to the Lincolnshire Show, he's not going to do it. Newcastle to Lincoln. Yeah. Even Sally Mundy will actually say, no, it's not going to happen. Will you be returning with us in the very near future? At least
I do hope so, yes.
Good. I'd love to play your song next time as well.
Sorry?
We'll have to play you a song next time as well.
Normally, Ian gives a kind of a reprise on one of the new tunes we've played on the midweek. I could play 20 seconds, but it's not going to be worthwhile, is it really? I mean, it'd be Uber Fuse if you want to check it out, Ian. Uber Fuse.
Right. Yeah, I thought I'd escape from it all.
He's not going to do that.
They were very good.
Exactly.
Were they? Oh, right.
Yeah, we spoke with one half of them yesterday. Mm-hmm. She seemed very sweet.
Oh,
so you see,
one half of them.
They're a duo.
Faster the hip with
it. Fuse or Uber?
Yes.
Uber and Fuse.
Yes, Uber or Fuse. Fused.
That's the magical thing there. Ian Lennox will return after the news. We'll hopefully be talking about cars. I know, it's all sorts of... Okay, fair enough. Let's move on to the next particular stage of SinoFan, which is the weather. Highs of 22 degrees centigrade, lows of 12 degrees centigrade. A mild start will follow with warm, sunny spells throughout the day. Ben, if you'd like to just take that call, it may well be one of our producers in London saying, we're ready for you, please come through. All this and more on SinoFan.
got my first real six string, bought it at the five and dime.
So it can be revealed that the first consumer-led car awards have landed. The winners of the automotive world, based on the needs and wants of those most in the know. And to discuss some of the amazing findings of this, we're delighted to welcome the cars editor of Auto Trader, Andy Pringle. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning.
And the road test editor of Auto Trader, that would be the fabulous Ivan Astrup. Good morning, Ivan.
Good morning.
Excellent. Andy, let's come to you, good self. I haven't revealed anything about this as yet, but the winners for 2017, the Skoda comes in at number 10, the Volvo number 9 and number 8, best car for new drivers at number 7. What are the surprises for yourselves in this list of winners for 2017?
Well, yeah, the honest truth is I don't think there are many surprises. When you look down that list of winners, you see the overall car of the year was the Jaguar XF, and you look at the replies from all the people who contributed to our survey. And when you look into the data we've got from that, the Jaguar put such a strong performance in, it couldn't be anything other than the winner.
So, as you've just revealed, the British-born Jaguar XF has won the new car of the year for 2017. Professor Fiona Moore, I always see you as a Jaguar driver. Any sort of thoughts for yourself, or are you more a Mercedes-Benz E-Class, which came at number 2?
Yeah, well, I'm very flattered. It would have to be the Jag all the way, I have to say, even though my current car is a Smart, which makes it... A little Mercedes spectrum there, but the car I absolutely love is actually the Mini Cooper Classic. Used to have one for years till it was became impractical.
Well, the Mini Hatch comes in at number 3 for best car for city drivers.
Oh, well done. Good for BMW there.
So, nice from that perspective. Ivan, as road test editor for Auto Trader, I mean, again, this survey, very much the creme de la creme of cars and so on. Did you sort of think, yeah, that's pretty much okay? I mean, the Ford Fiesta, I'm just saddened that the Rover 25, bless its heart, still doesn't... I still keep mine going. That's the important thing. Any thoughts from yourself, Ivan?
Like Andy said, there were no sort of real surprises in this in the list of winners. You know, each and every one of these cars is doing a job of satisfying the people that have bought it, and we have the comments and the data from 10,000 consumers to back that up. So you can only say that all the guys that have won awards are really doing really well at satisfying their customers at the moment.
Ben, thoughts for yourself. You're a car specialist. You've had experience with car companies and so on. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm not pleasantly surprised by some of the cars on the list. A lot of them I'm not surprised about, but I think the Jaguar XF surprised me out of all the cars to be Car of the Year. Although I do think it's still a great car in itself. I personally don't like the styling myself. I think the older style XF looked a little bit better, but that's just personal preference. Although other cars on the list, which I think are outstanding, I think the Volvo XC90 is one to be mentioned, and the new Audi TT as well is another one which I think is very good. Although I think the list is very well suited, and I think that they're all very appropriate for the titles they've gained.
Andy, are you returning to yourself in terms of these new and improved new car awards and so on? Interesting, something that came out of the research was half of all car buyers don't know which make or model they want when they start shopping, with a third open to new and used vehicles. And again, is that something where you think, yeah, it's just habits of purchasing those wonderful horseless carriages?
Well, yeah, there are all sorts of habits our research reveals. And yeah, we've deliberately chosen these awards to be titled things like the best car for families, the best car for city drivers, because it's all very well talking among the industry terms of things like super minis and compact executives. But as you rightly say, the people out there who are buying these cars just don't understand what those terms mean. So we've very deliberately chosen simple, easy to understand language so people understand which awards are relevant to them and hopefully go out and buy those cars for themselves and be just as satisfied as all these 10,000 owners are with their cars.
Fiona, any thoughts from yourself?
Yeah, I mean, it's you've got to achieve that balance because, if you want a set of car awards for industry insiders, then, you've got to focus on the features that the industry is interested in. But, if you want something that's going to be meaningful for the consumer, you have to look at what consumers actually use cars for.
And from this perspective, obviously, this is the UK scenario. Any thoughts as to how this would translate to Canada at all? Would that be, or is it a case of, I mean, would the Jaguar XF also go down well in Toronto and Ontario and so on?
Possibly if it had winter features. I mean, you know, I worked on the line at the BMW factory for a while. And one of the interesting things there is, of course, the way they do production now, it's sort of semi-customized. You know, consumers buying new cars send their requests through. They go through the computer. They hit the just-in-time system on the lines. And you could always tell the Canadian ones because they were North American spec and they always wanted heated seats, winterized tires, all the things that you need to deal with the extremes of climate.
I think, Andy, that's something else. The international version of Auto Trader could open up a whole new scenario from that perspective, keeping the globe going. Just a thought.
I'll bear it in mind, thank you.
Yeah. I think Chevy actually did a concept car that was purely for the Canadian market called the Muskeg. Pretty interesting.
It's a possibility. Where's the best place to go to find out more details? Presumably, I suspect, the Auto Trader website, Ivan. Is that correct?
That's absolutely right, yeah. All the findings of the awards and the research are on there, so just visit autotrader.co.uk.
And I'm going to ask both of you gentlemen to put forward your musical choice to take us out of this little feature. We can offer you Snow Patrol and Chasing Cars, obviously a Canadian theme possibly there, Gary Newman and Cars, or indeed The Cars and Drive. Where do you want to go?
Well, I have to say, Gary Newman, without any doubt at all, please.
Yeah, I had a feeling that was going to be the case. So I take it, Andy Pringle and Ivan Astrop, you've had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today. Has it been okay for you, gentlemen?
Lovely. Thank you very much indeed. Yes.
Good.
Absolutely.
Well, hopefully we'll connect again in the near future as Auto Trader continues to go from strength to strength and we find out what car's doing this and that and the other. And here's Gary, just for you, gentlemen. Take care now. All the best. As we said on the first part of the production, Ben Lewis is going to be experiencing his first ever Lincolnshire show next week.
Looking forward to it.
Professor Fiona Moore has not experienced the delights of Lincolnshire show. Maybe next year, Fiona.
Yes, absolutely, if we can swing it.
True delight. Online now, the sponsorship and trade sales manager from the Lincolnshire Agricultural Society, the one and only Sally Mundy. How are you, Sally?
I'm very well, thank you, Alex. Now, the tension is already sort of just building up to a phenomenal level. We're actually waiting, hopefully, Hannah Gilby from Lincolnshire Co-op, who might drop in for a part of the programme to tell us about their ground. We were speaking to Julie Corden in the first part of the production, letting us know exactly where the Lincolnshire University tent is going to be, just by the main ring. We'll be there. We'll be sorting out a variety of elements and pieces. How's it shaping up, Sally? I mean, you've got the weather. That's looking good. Is everything all tickety-boo?
It's all coming together very nicely. There isn't really any tension. It's more excitement. It's such a great event to be involved in. We've got marquee contractors on site. The site's opened this morning for other exhibitors to start setting up. So lots of agricultural machinery coming on this morning. Yeah, it's all going really well.
Just had a message from Katie Grimerson. She's in Birmingham. She's having a little panic. Are we actually going to be playing her request at 9:15? Well, it'll be played shortly after 9:15 because we can't just burst into your good self, Sally. But I know that you will give a full dedication to Katie Grimerson in Birmingham with Supersonic, which is the tune that she's actually asked for. So, you know, it'll make sure that is passed through. Fiona, any thoughts for yourself about the Lincolnshire County Show? And have you checked out sort of similar events in Canada at all?
Yeah, well, I suppose the closest equivalent where I'm from in Canada would be the Canadian National Exhibition, which is a... It started off as an agricultural fair very much in the 19th century, but since gone to become a big trade and exposition midway, lots of attractions and shows, or also possibly the Royal Winter Fair, which, as the name suggests, takes place in November, which is sort of, because it's cold then, you know, less in the way of midways and attractions and a lot more in the way of agriculture, concerts, competitions. I used to go down as a horse mad little girl and watch the dressage.
Oh, that's good. And, of course, there's the food and gift fair, which we start building up to as far as Lincoln is concerned.
Do you have butter sculptures, actually? That's a big thing in North America, and I don't know if it happens over here. Do you have butter sculptures?
Sally, do we have any butter sculptures?
We don't. No.
Oh, you totally need butter sculptures.
Oh, yeah. Sounds very intriguing.
Well worth suggesting for Jane to consider for the 2018 programme. Always thinking ahead, you know. What about butter sculptures? It might be greeted with total silence when you actually raise up the meeting. But it's worth just you know, floating that by them.
I guarantee once you Google it, there won't be total silence.
Exactly.
So. As soon as I finish this interview, I'm Googling it.
Sculptures and butter and sculptures. So as we said, have a little look outside, Ben. Just see if Hannah Gilby is actually around, because she's normally a fairly prompt, punctual soul. Do you know where the Lincolnshire Co-op will actually be in terms of the various other things?
It'd be interesting to know, what does she look like?
You'll have to open the door and ask her and say, are you Hannah Gilby? That'll be fine. You know, she'll respond well to that, I'm sure, Sally. I named this person Hannah Gilby, and if you are that person, you can claim a script from the Midweek Drive. Or some other sort of material there. Any sort of rationale that you'd like to put forward? I mean, we're heading up to the last moments. Can people actually still purchase tickets for the Lincolnshire Show?
Yes. Advance tickets are still available online. They're available through various outlets right across the county, namely through Lincolnshire Co-op stores. And also available at the Echo. Advance tickets still available, and obviously people can pay on the gate on the day.
You mentioned those magical words there, available through Co-op stores. And as if by magic, Hannah Gilby's back with us in the studio. How are you, Hannah?
Good morning. I'm fine. How are you?
Very marvellous. Well, did you wave at the window this morning?
I came in. I was here at 9:05. I was just sat outside, but I think through the little window.
Yeah, you should have.
Quite small and stature, so you couldn't quite see me out there.
Well, that's the reason we sent Ben out, to just check that you were actually there. Hannah, bearing in mind the connection the Lincolnshire Co-op has with the Lincolnshire Show, are you excited by next
Absolutely.
Week?
Absolutely, yeah, we're all really, really looking forward to it. There's just so much going on for us this year. So we'll have two stands there, one of which will be a fully working food store with tills. So, you know, if everyone's wandering around and getting a bit hungry and thirsty and they want some food and actually come and get a meal deal there and go through there. Our other marquee will actually be showcasing all our different business areas. So there'll be loads and loads of really fun, interactive stuff going on there, and loads of competitions as well, which is always, always really good.
Fiona just raised the issue of butter sculptures.
I'm intrigued by that. I don't know quite how that would work. Perhaps everyone could dig in afterwards with some toast or some scones or something. I don't know. Surely it might melt in those kind of temperatures.
Toast and giant butter sculptures is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And do we have an address in terms of whereabouts on the showgrounds the Lincolnshire Co-op stand will be?
Yes. So we've got two stands, 825 Roby and 826 Roby. So same places as last year, I think. And we'll also have... I think a big balloon or something like that, so we're quite easy to spot.
You see, Sally, that proves your role as sponsorship and trade sales manager. Did you notice the hyper-professionalism that Hannah delivered in terms of where exactly you can track down the co-op stand next week?
Absolutely, and I'm pleased to confirm that that's exactly where the co-op
is. I'm relieved now.
Yes, we have success, and I'm looking at some photographs of those butter sculptures now, and we've got a Yoda butter sculpture.
There's a Jabba the Hutt there as well, actually, if I can find him.
Lord above. I feel as though a whole new world is about to open up, Sally. It's just as well you're too busy to come into the studio today, because the butter sculptures would have just kept you busy for the whole time, really. It's just amazing. Obviously, people get... Ben, as I say, it's your first show. We're going to be along for the preview on Tuesday. Hannah, will you be there on Tuesday? Because we're doing a little preview before the actual event itself. So.
I won't myself, but I will be there for the 2 days, running around, grabbing people, taking photographs. Having lots of fun with them as well.
Well, because your official role with the Lincolnshire Co-op is?
Media and Communications Coordinator.
Media and Communications Coordinator.
Yeah, sounds very fancy, but it's just doing lots of fun stuff and getting involved.
It's what the University of Lincoln kind of paved the way for, really. So
it all began here for me.
Back in the day. And your degree, of course, was?
In journalism.
Yep, we remember it well.
Yes.
Bless you. Ben, any thoughts that you'd like to put to Sally about life, the universe, or indeed, you know, because you're not doing...
Well, we'll talk about the Lincolnshire show, exactly. I think. Sally, what's the biggest highlight you think we'll be looking forward to when we visit next week?
Ooh,
or any person,
Bear in mind, Sal, that Ben is not just doing day one and day two. He's also coming on to do the preview day with me as well on a Tuesday. So it's Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
Getting fully stuck in. Getting fully involved.
Wow. I would find it really, really difficult to pick out a highlight because there is literally something for everybody here. Whatever your age, you know, young and old alike, there is really something for everybody. My personal highlight is the Tuesday night, because I love, we ask that everybody set up and ready to go by 6 o'clock on the Tuesday. And I just love going around the site on a Tuesday night, seeing it all set up before we open the gates to the public. And it's like, yeah, quite satisfying, really, how it all comes together.
It's awesome. Just as Katie Grimmerson is awesome in her own way. Yes, we've reached the stage where we can actually use the quote from Katie Grimmerson, a graduate from the University of Lincoln a few years ago in American Studies, where she said recently, "I think Liam Gallagher should just be Prime Minister. Might be a bit more successful than May or Corbyn." Outside chance, I admit, you know, independent, but then look what's happened in America. I won't say anything else. Ben, would you like to dedicate this next tune to Katie? Because she's asked for it for quite some time. It's Supersonic and Oasis. After, of course, we've asked those last two questions to Sally Munday. The first time she's ever received them on the other end of a telephone line.
All right. Sally, have you enjoyed your telephone link with us today on the show?
I have, thank you, Ben.
And will you be joining us again next week? In terms of we will be meeting you, maybe.
We'll probably see you around,
face
Sally.
To face. Yeah, face exactly. To face next week.
So this is the whole point, you know, we will see you in some sort of position there, you know, running around like a whirling dervish. Good. actually, Sally, would you like to dedicate this one to Katie Grimmerson? Over to you, please, Sal, your last sort of routine. It's Oasis and Supersonic. Please take it away.
And this is dedicated to Katie, Oasis with Supersonic.
I need to be myself.
Wondrous stuff. Okay, moving on, let's find out, Fiona and Ben, some more wonderful co-op detail about what exactly they're going to be carrying on in those two fabulous days at the Lincolnshire Showground next week, when, of course, summer officially begins, the 21st and 22nd of June. Solstice, it's everything falling into place. Hannah, what's happening?
Loads and loads and loads of stuff. It's going to be absolutely fantastic. So really, for us, being there is about sort of engaging with our members and the visitors that are there as well. So that's having lots of fun, interacting with them and sort of giving a bit back as well. So loads of competitions that are on, really. So definitely, definitely come down and see us. So travel, for example, we've got something really good there. Sometimes you see on Facebook where it's such like a 360-degree view of these beautiful holidays that people are on and things like that. We've got some virtual reality technology there at the show this year, where you can sit down, put these amazing goggles on, and feel as if you were there in this beautiful
and you are there
place. And you are there, and you can look around, and it's wonderful. So that's something fun and interactive to do. Our florist, we've got a beautiful archway of flowers, and if you take a picture with that, you can win £30 in florist vouchers. Post office has got a mailing sack you can pick cards out of. If you get a winning card, you get a high street voucher. If you remember, you get two goes at that, so that's always nice, two chances to win. Our pharmacy stand will be there with the inflatable health pod as well, because we know people have got busy lives. It's not always easy, is it, to put put yourself
I just
first
love the
and go and get some
inflatable
some
health
advice.
Pod.
I know, it's fantastic. Well, it normally goes out to communities and things like that, because, as I say, busy lives, you might do the school run, you might be working, and it's difficult to go and get the advice that you need. So we'll have those guys there. They'll actually have something really fun, which is a bit of a reaction tester. If you've ever seen them before, but they're a bit like giant spider webs with big buttons. You have to push them as fast as you can.
How would Ben, I mean, it's his first show, how would he react to the reaction tester?
Because I did one at Goodwood last year.
Did you?
Yeah.
So what was the score like?
I think it's done on time. So they give you a certain amount of reactions to do, and it was done in the quickest time you could do it in. Mine was 16 seconds.
16, and do you think you can have a...
I beat my dad by half a second, so...
But he wasn't happy about
no,
that.
No, probably not. No, I don't know what that stood next to everyone else. Probably not as well as some other people, but... Yeah, it was good fun.
Okay. Yeah, so we've got three age groups. You can win £25 in Lincolnshire Co-op vouchers with that. And our pharmacy guys will be giving out sort of free health checks and advice as well. And just loads of stuff, really. It's actually a big prize draw we're having as well. So there's other prizes as well, from £100 in travel vouchers to an evening escape at Eden Hall, afternoon tea. So you can try and get those. Just come along and have a chat to our business areas, and you can get entered into that prize draw. And if you remember, this is the most amazing bit for me. If you remember, you can enter a separate prize draw to win £500 in Lincolnshire Co-op vouchers, which should get you a fair few shops, I think.
It's worth joining and becoming a member just for that, really. It's amazing. It's great stuff. Fiona, does this appeal to your good self? I mean, again, not next week because you're busily back in London with various other bits and pieces, but is this something which you think, I think it's time we actually had the Alan Stevens, Fiona Moore Roadshow checking out the Lincolnshire Show?
It does sound like there's lots of exciting activities.
Reaction Absolutely. Tester is one that strikes me. Yep.
I've never done a reaction test.
Yeah, come and do it.
Yes. I should.
And that's just the co-op scenario. Any other sort of little highlights you've got for us?
Oh, all sorts, really. So we've got a coffee shop there, which is really nice. We've extended the seating so we can sit up to 90 people and get hot drinks, coffee and snacks. There's actually a voucher on the back of your Lincolnshire Show ticket where if you buy a cake, you get a free tea or regular coffee. So that's quite nice. It can be quite hot, you know, and you're wandering around. My legs get tired anyway. So it's always nice to come and have a bit of a chance to breathe and relax and sit there. And our people and performance team will be there for the first time this year as well, actually. So if you're interested in working for us, you can come and have a chat to them. They'll be giving away seed packets, and for every seed packet we give out, there'll be a donation made to our community champion scheme, which is all about giving back to local causes and communities, basically.
And, as we frequently say, Hannah, without the input from the co-op in its very first inception as a full-time radio station back in 2007, Siren would not have been the beast you see it today.
Oh, it's lovely to hear. It's nice to be here.
So in many ways, you're part of the whole family that's opened up a whole range of factors there. Stay with us. We'll talk a bit more about the Lincolnshire Show, what you're personally looking forward to as the thing proceeds. We may speak to William Sitwell. We'll probably speak to Alan Stevens. All this and more after the cause. Yes, it would melt. The butter sculpture would melt if you had summer sunshine. And you know, I don't think Doctor Who's ever done the case of the butter sculptures. At least, not yet. Yes, Alan Stevens. Fiona Moore is in the studio. She hasn't walked out. She's done two consecutive shows, the Midweek Drive on a Wednesday and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. This woman is just a phenomenon.
Hello.
Exactly.
Hello.
I'm busy introducing the people of Lincolnshire to the North American art of butter sculpting. It's going down pretty well.
Hannah, I think you've been particularly taken with this. And again, I think we suggested to Sally she should suggest it to Jane Southall and the rest of the team at the Lincolnshire Agricultural Society. Maybe she'd raise it with Ursula and company at the co-op area.
Well, we do a lot of fun things with food for our social media. So maybe we'll have a few tests with the comms team first. And if it works well, maybe take it higher.
I mean, is there a skill to sculpting butter, Fiona?
There is, actually. People compete at national and international levels, you know, and I mean, if you think about it, you know, it's same as sculpting in any other medium. It's just that it's got to be refrigerated.
Goat's cheese? Goat's butter? Is that
goat's cheese is a bit runny, though. That's the issue.
So you basically stick with your sheep, of course, can reproduce. Are we looking at traditional dairy butter here?
I believe it's generally just dairy butter, though I confess I don't really know much about it personally. I've just seen the finalists in the Canadian competitions on display at the Royal Winter Fair, that's all.
Well, Ben, you're intrigued.
Yeah, I had a little Google, and it's a piece of art, no doubt.
It is a piece of art.
It's almost piece on par with ice sculpting, yeah. But it doesn't look particularly easy to do.
Last night, in fact, with the Midweek Drive, it's fair to say Kieran Moore from Starburst magazine, even though he's the Doctor Who correspondent, kind of wasn't really hugely taken with Empress and Mars, I think. And Fiona, you shared with your namesake, of course, you know, some of the sort of thoughts. Ben, you've already predicted that Alan seems to be just on a spiral downwards.
It deteriorates each week, Alan, so...
So we're not expecting a great sort of range from this. But I mean, Hannah, have you been watching the Doctor Who series recently at all?
Well, I can catch it. I used to be an avid fan, especially when David Tennant was doing it. I haven't got much time these days, unfortunately. Yeah.
But those words, especially when David Tennant was doing it, how often?
Very millennial, isn't it? Amongst millennials.
Clearly there. Alan, Empress of Mars, where did it stand on the Alan Stevens scale?
I can't really say. I mean, I plan to watch it back, but I've been going through the series Blake 7. I've only reached the episode Gold, so I'm about three or four episodes off the end of the entire show. So I haven't really had any gap to watch it back. And when I did watch it, I think Fiona... I was a bit drunk, wasn't I, Fiona?
Just a little.
Yeah,
just
I was tired. I had a long day, and I was... I think we didn't watch it when it went out. I think we were watching something else, right? Some of the new stuff about the election. And then Fiona said, can we watch Doctor Who, for God's sake? And I said, oh, sorry, okay. So he put it on, and I wasn't really in the mood to watch it because, I mean, I hadn't really enjoyed the previous weeks. Though I did think the trailer for the episode looked really good. So, you know, I was a bit more enthusiastic, so I switched it on. And then the name Mark Gatiss came up. And unfortunately, you know, it's a bit of a dog whistle to me, really. I mean, I start twitching when I see the name Mark Gatiss because I don't think he's a great writer. And certainly the last two things I saw from him, which was the Sherlock episodes, were utterly awful. So, you know, I was a bit drunk, a bit tired, and prejudiced. So, you know, I watched it, and I can't really say I even followed what was going on. Now, Fiona seemed to think it was okay, and on the internet, everyone said, oh, God, it was a fantastic episode ever, brilliant, best episode ever, and all this stuff. And I don't know, I mean, I'd have to watch it back to make a proper assessment. What I could say was that it was obviously derivative from, you know, of previous Ice Warrior stories. That the Ice Warrior Queen, or whatever they call them, Empress, sorry, kind of reminded me very much of the, in fact, very similar performance to that, what was that big spider thing called?
The Arachnos.
The Arachnos, you know, the teeth and the very pronounced, you know, but you know, they go on about, oh, Doctor Who's changed. It's actually very, very similar to what it was before because it's continually recycling stuff right back to, you know, right back to the very first season, 2005. I think really people aren't. It's not so much that it's changed. It's that it's stayed the same. And so you watch it and you think, oh, I've seen that episode before. I've seen this before. I've heard that joke before. You know, they're too cowardly to actually, you know, progress the show and put new blood into it. So, you know, but I thought the Empress costume was very good, you know, and it's always nice to see the Ice Borers back. Though I remember a lady called Janet Black once pointed out that a lot of these monsters come back, and yet they all look the same. You know, back in the classic series, you had a group of Ice Borers, and they all looked different. One had a slightly bigger head, and one was slightly shorter, and one had a more stocky. They were different kind of costumes. But now they sort of like clone them, so they all look exactly the same. You know, and you know, bar of course, you know, the Empress or whatever, and they do that with. I think they did that with the Zygons as well, because the ones with the pointed heads was the leaders, and the other ones had different shaped heads, and yet suddenly they've all got pointed heads. So it's a kind of reductiveness, I think, you know, this is what a Zygon is, therefore we will sort of clone it along, and, you know. So, you know, the initial output appeared to be, this is fantastic and brilliant, and it does appear to be something of a kickback, saying, well, this is, you know, fan... wank.
You can't say that, right, Alan. Just let's step away from it, step away from the sort of concept there. Whilst we've been speaking, of course, I have actually passed over a current edition of the Doctor Who Monthly magazine to Hannah and Ben, and they've been perusing the whole thing. Hannah, does that monster float your boat, so to speak, or do you think, well, I don't know, I just don't know?
Well, there's a very nice picture of the Empress of Mars on the front cover. I think definitely, I think I've done well with it personally. I wouldn't want to meet that either in real life or in my nightmares, really.
Have you seen any of the Ice Warriors? No, presumably not, because they didn't really re-emerge until the Matt Smith era, when they were brought back. Also written by, I believe, Mark Gatiss.
Indeed it was.
In a submarine.
Yeah, they first
a surprisingly large submarine.
They first appeared in 1967. They were created by a writer called Brian Hales. He then wrote a sequel to it called The Seeds of Death, which was mainly based on the fact they had a foam machine, not a lot of money, and some costumes left over. It wasn't a great script, and it was rewritten by Terence Dix. Then Brian Hales wrote The Curse of Peladon, and that was the one that introduced, you know, that large one-eyed penis monster thing, which you see at the end of the story, Arf Centauri. And
he's got no shame this morning, has he, really? If
you know, absolutely not, yes.
He's gone from hermaphrodites to all manner of bits and pieces within the whole thing. But
content warning, children, content warning.
And then, of course, there was the Monster Paladon, which again was a story which was quite heavily rewritten by Terence Dix and was fairly bland. And that was in 1974. And the next time the Ice Warriors appeared on screen was it was 2007, was it?
Wasn't it it was the Matt Smith era, so that would make it post-2010,
yeah? Oh, yeah, sorry, yeah. Can't be 2007, can't it? Was 2000
I think it was 11, 12? No, Googling like crazy. Hang on.
I don't know.
Ben's losing the will to live.
I'm all good.
It's just opening
after that. I lost it after 2010. Doctor.
Didn't we all?
Exactly. So, if I ask for a mark out of 10 for Empress of Mars, we're not going to get
Next week, I might have got to the point of actually watching it again, so I can't really. Oh. Fiona could probably give you a mark out of 10.
6. I didn't despise it, but it didn't put me on the edge of my seat either.
I thought you quite liked it at the time, but then again, I did,
but as Alex asked me about this yesterday, the thing is that I liked it, but a lot of it was kind of because the nostalgia was pretty much guaranteed to appeal to somebody about my age, you know, who sort of went into fandom during the hiatus and read a lot of New Adventures and listened to audio visuals and things like that. So, you know, it was kind of like the TV equivalent of that. So
yeah, that's a good point.
So the thing is, I was having fun, but at the same time, I had this little niggle that, anybody over the age of 50 and under the age of 35 is probably not having as much fun as I am with this.
I don't know. I mean, the thing is that, I would say that on the one hand, it was visually quite striking, wasn't it?
As that lady
just said, she, the Empress looked very, very good. We haven't seen that kind of thing before, but
I love the steampunk spacesuits. You probably didn't notice those, but they were gorgeous.
It was certainly, you know, the design of the Empress was certainly within the ambit of what the Ice Warriors were, and it was good to see a lot of them. And there was, you know, it was you can't visually, it was very, very good. I think there was a bit of a debate about whether there should be a black soldier in there or not. I mean, I would say no, because I don't think the British Empire was particularly pro,
I read the discussion.
I've also put something in there, and there was a case of where someone who became a black Sudanese, wasn't it?
Yeah.
A black drummer. But, you know, I don't consider the British Empire clearly, you know, the British Empire was a pretty racist organization.
Multicultural. The thing is that the thing that was distinctive about that soldier wasn't that he was black, but that he was actually black African. There were quite a lot of mixed race people, because, as I said at the time, actually, a lot of soldiers were having liaisons with local women, and the children of soldiers tend to get encouraged to join the army. So they weren't
What happened in the story? I mean, an Ice Warrior ship crashed in England, and they put some soldiers aboard, and then they flew to Mars. Is that what happened?
No, the Ice Warrior ship had crashed in South Africa thousands of years ago, and the soldiers found it, revived the guy, you know, like in the original
series. It crashed in South Africa?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a bit more explanation there. I was under the delusion it crashed on Wimbledon Common or something. No,
it was in South Africa. These soldiers happened to cross it.
I think that's a bit more crashed on Wimbledon Common. We would have known about it if it had crashed on Wimbledon Common.
No, we had a damn great... During the Tenant era, you had a huge rate Cyber King stamping around London, blowing everyone out. Everyone forgot that, didn't they?
Wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey.
That's politics. Alan, have you had a recently interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Well, yeah, I suppose so, yeah. Certainly,
as you haven't had to fight over the phone as well, you know, it's quite nice, really. Equal shares from that point of view.
Yeah, same quality is better. I think same quality is better anyway than Forest of Dean, isn't it? For some reason.
Forest of Dean compared with Staines in terms of sound quality, it's one of those strange and bizarre aspects.
Things about Staines, you often had internet out, didn't we, Fiona?
Yeah, well...
I haven't had one of those since... I mean, the Forest of Dean is certainly a mobile phone black spot, but the internet's fine.
Yeah, well, you notice the BT Junction box down the road continually gets vandalised. I think that's probably one of the reasons.
Really?
Yeah.
9:46, and we're already talking about BT vandalising junction boxes. Ooh. There aren't many radio shows that will go down that particular route, I can tell you. Anyway, let's move on. We've still got to find out some final thoughts from Hannah Gilby, Media and Communications Coordinator for the Lincolnshire Co-op, about the excitement of the Lincolnshire Show. Alan, will you return in 2 weeks from now to update us on life with WHO and beyond?
2 weeks from now? Why has the Lincoln Show got in the way, is it?
Yep.
It's an adventure in itself, really, and much as we'd like to kind of, you know, we just feel, no, we just need to sort of work our way through that process, if only to actually continue the campaign to bring butter sculptures to Lincoln.
Butter scotch?
That as well. Speak soon. Alan Stevens, fare thee well.
Bye-bye.
So Hannah Gilby, after having that little Doctor Who hiatus in which it opens up a whole new magical Gallifreyan world, let's move back to the Lincolnshire Show, share some facts, details and a few other bits and pieces about how Lincolnshire Co-op, just one of many exhibitors obviously at the Lincolnshire Show, but nevertheless a very key one and a fun one to participate in.
Absolutely.
absolutely. So we'll have loads of colleagues there on the day, as I say, from all our businesses and from our membership community team, people and performances, as I mentioned as well. We'll actually have our funeral colleagues there as well, which is actually a really important part of things. They're one of our business areas.
Exactly, from cradle to grave.
Well, people don't always have time to have those conversations. Just like in pharmacy, we put ourselves behind everything else a lot of the time, behind our other priorities, because life and its nature takes over. We're busy, you know, so the chance to actually, you know, meet colleagues in funerals is actually quite nice. To have a cup of tea, have a chat, you know, nothing scary or anything like that. It's just great to be part of the show itself, really. What I love about it is just that, you know, once a year we all gather there. It just shows the scope and the breadth and the variety of businesses and organisations there are at Lincolnshire. And so, we all have this understanding of what we're all doing, exactly. Which I think is wonderful.
How many shows have you clocked up so far, Hannah? Let's see.
Ooh, I think too many to count, I think, for Lincolnshire Co-op. Sure, well.
So advice for Ben, first show, of course, on Wednesday and Thursday.
Do as much as you can, see as much as you can. It's a bit hectic. There are things that you wouldn't expect to see there. People on stilts, weird and wonderful animals, things like
always
that.
Always lovely to have people on stilts.
I know. I think it's fantastic. And
which stall should we visit first, Alex?
Well, that's a difficult choice.
Gosh. Small for choice. We have Julie earlier. We've got Co-op now.
It's just everyone is wonderful. Obviously, clearly, we'll make our way there. And you can hear our audio diaries as well on Siren FM next Thursday of various events and things that we'll be doing. Plus, they'll be up as podcasts too. Hannah, it's been sensational touching base with your good self.
Thank
pleasure as
much.
Ever. Fiona, have you enjoyed your morning edition?
I have indeed. It's been lovely.
Splendid. And Ben, good as ever.
As ever.
Good. We will head off with Clean Bandit featuring Shana Bass and then a little touch of Bronski Beat and Royal Blood before the actual news strikes up. We've got Inspired on Air, a rerun at 7 o'clock this evening. We've got Chris Clarkson, a whole heap of other good things on Siren 107.3 FM, Lincoln's first community radio station. To Gabriella Peralta from Gibraltar and the United Nations, of course, these days. Richard Fitzwilliams, Julie Corden, Ian Lennox, Jeff Brazier, Sally Monday and Alan Stevens. Many thanks indeed and certainly to Professor Fiona Moore, Hannah Gilby and Ben Lewis. Thank you. Thank you, dear listener. Can we all say bye-bye?
Bye.
Bye. Bye.